Welcome to The Wagon, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Once again, welcome to the Waggle Podcast. And yes, this edition of the Waggle Podcast and every edition is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, who are known for their Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, which includes massaging shampoos for your head, hot steam towels, and sports on TV like football, hockey, baseball, and basketball. But let's be honest, the best sport in the world is football. Oh, and that's right, legendary haircuts at Sport Clips. It is good to be a guy, and it is very good to be a Sport Clips guy. Shout out to our partners at Sport Clips, who are always keeping us supported here at The Waggle. And here at The Waggle, we want to support you by having some of the conversations that you want, that you are wondering about. And so we've said, well, listen, who do you want us to talk to? And certainly when the news that Ed Hervey was stepping down from his position with the BC Lions, we knew we needed to talk to someone rooted in BC that's going to help the franchise move forward. And that person is head coach Rick Campbell, someone who has a great relationship with Ed Hervey, both professionally and personally. And that is a big reason why Rick Campbell left a great situation in Ottawa to go to BC. So next on The Waggle, we talk to Rick Campbell about what Ed Hervey brought to the franchise, what the Lions are missing without him, and how, in a very odd offseason, they look to fill the void. That's up next. So on The Waggle, as news breaks, we try to react to it and pivot and bring you the stakeholders, the information havers, when that news breaks. And I think there's no better person to talk to, especially if you're a BC Lions fan right now, than the head coach of the BC Lions. Now that the news has settled a little bit that Ed Hervey will no longer be a part of the franchise. And Coach Campbell, thanks so much for joining us. And maybe I'll start there. In a year, an off season with so much influx and so much uncertainty, how did you hear and how did you handle the news that, you know, Ed was no longer going to be your coworker?
Well, you're right about this being a different kind of year in many different ways. It was really surprising, actually. Just learned about it last Friday morning. So I'm not going to get into his personal stuff, obviously, but he just had some stuff where he needed to step back for a bit. And I really like working with Ed, and he's actually my friend. I've known him for a long time, way back to when he was playing in Edmonton. So it was quite shocking. And we're definitely going to miss him. My first question to him was, is he doing okay just personally and all that? And he assured me that he was. So that's good. And it's kind of been, like you said, it's been a whirlwind, but we've had a weekend to think it over, and we're going to be okay, and we're going to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the question we've all been asking ourselves and each other for the last couple of months is, like, how are you doing? Constantly checking in, and I think we're all kind of grading on a curve. So I take that chance to ask you that question. How are you doing? You obviously made the move to go to BC with an understanding that you'd be working with Ed and that you'd be, at this point, like, you know, a couple weeks away from competing for a Grey Cup. And none of that is currently the case. So how has this all been for you personally to process?
Well, obviously, it's been quite a bit. I'm very great. I have a lot to be grateful and thankful for, and that I've been able to stay healthy. And I still have a job and, you know, things like that. So there's a lot to be thankful for. Obviously, it's a totally different deal. I think I've been doing this 23 seasons straight in the CFL. So to not be doing football this year is quite different for me. And I've been trying to remember, because I think it's really good advice. And sometimes I got to remember to take my own advice, but just trying to stay healthy mentally and physically and take care of myself and do all those things and be patient. You know, it looks like this is going to go on for a few more months, and so we'll see what happens. But I really look forward to, in the spring, if we can get back to somewhat of a normal situation where we can get back to sports and fans in the stands and all those things.
I was on the campus of Western not too long ago, helping them with their virtual homecoming. I was, you know, talking with Coach Marshall, and I said to him, I don't really know if I should congratulate you for being undefeated right now or give you condolences because you don't have a team to prepare to get ready to play. And so how's that been like for you, the struggle of, you know, not having something to get ready for, to prepare for, but also, like, these are not wasted times. You're in football constantly preparing and trying to get yourself and your organization better. How have you managed those two things?
Yeah, I think the time it really hit me was when the season was officially canceled, you know, when we said we are not playing this year. You know, when things started to get delayed, obviously you weren't sure what was going on, but you're kind of living in that state of limbo, waiting to see what was going to happen. But I think for everyone, just in talking, I know the way I felt, and then talking to players and coaches when the news came down that the season was officially canceled, it was you know, you kind of get down in the dumps for a few days. And, you know, just when you realize that it's not going to happen this year. But I've kind of flipped into the mode is that, you know, we need to get ready for next year. And so we're thinking through all those things about, you know, we're going to, around here, I know we're going to try to keep as much as we can together as far as coaches and veteran players and stuff like that. So, I think as these weeks go by, and I'm hoping, you know, as the weeks go by, we get some news from the CFL regarding, you know, the plan going forward, which I know the plan is to play next year, but we'll get all those details as they come along. And then, you know, it'll keep getting busier. And, you're right about the one thing that always happens in football, regardless, is you're always on the hunt for players. So our personnel department and our coaches in any way they can assist is, you know, there is NFL and college games to watch and stuff like that. So that's always a 12-month process regardless of what's going on. And then, like I said, we'll just focus on getting ready for 2021.
I've often said the most difficult executive leadership job in sports is that of a CFL GM, just based off of the amount of people you have to evaluate at all different levels. You have to evaluate U sports players, you have to evaluate NCAA players from vastly different conferences, you have to evaluate the NFL players on the back end of their career, at the beginning of their career, not making team. And then obviously you have to evaluate the league, and now CFL 2.0, you have to evaluate Europe and the rest of the world. So losing a GM in an offseason is also a massive void. How do you, obviously you as the leader of the football team, how do you try to fill that void in such a very complex and nuanced job?
Yeah, so number one, we're absolutely going to miss Ed. I think he does a good job. And so we will miss him. Two things that why we're okay right now is, one is obviously it's a slower time and that obviously we're not playing. And then also we're very fortunate in this organization is we have a lot of people with a lot of CFL experience. So from Rick Lawlisher, who's our president, is he knows the CFL and how it operates really well. I know it really well. I've fulfilled a lot of different roles in my career. And so I know the league, I know the players, I know how it operates. Neil McElvoy is another guy that's in this building that's been here for a long time and again, knows the CFL, all that. And then the guys in our personnel department, we have guys like G. Roy Simon and Torrey Hunter and Rob Ralph. And we have a whole crew of guys, again, that have all been in this league. So we won't miss a beat for right now because everybody's still working and doing their thing. We have a full coaching staff, so we're going to still carry out all our duties like we normally would. And then it gives us also some time to reflect and make sure we do whatever we want to do going forward, to make sure we give ourselves the best chance in 2021. But we have a lot of pieces of the puzzle in place. It's not like we're a bunch of new people here. So gonna miss Ed, but we're definitely carrying on right now. And then we'll keep evaluating as we go forward.
You do know the league well, but one thing you don't know as well, maybe as some of the other coaches, is your own team, your own personnel, as you were new to the situation. Now, this extended period gives you more time to familiarize yourself with the personnel and the staff. But also, we're at a period where, as a coach, I'm sure you want to keep the players that you have engaged. You want to check in on them mentally with everything that's going on in the world. How have you been able to assimilate yourself with the actual roster, given we're in a time where you can't get together with the roster?
Yeah. So the one thing we did do in football before Zoom became popular this year is we've used Zoom or whatever that we call it GoToMeeting, but we've been doing that for, I don't know, 10 years or however long you've been able to do that, because we've had meetings with guys, even when it was a normal time and we were going to play a season in the spring and in the winter, that's how we met with guys who were all over North America. So that was one thing we were used to. And so we've done some of that, and the coaches stay involved with their guys by position. And we're kind of more in a mode now. At one point we were, talking some football and some strategy and scheme and all that. But like you said, this is more about just checking in, making sure guys are doing okay in the off season. And then, we'll ramp it back up as we get, through the new year and get towards spring, and away we go again.
And is there a message or a prevailing thought that you've kind of wanted to give those players to make sure that when you are ready to go and ready to play, that they are ready and you're able to compete for another championship?
Yeah, I think the number one thing, like I said, we had a full team meeting, I don't know what it was, a month ago or something, online, about taking care of yourself. I think that seems like an easy thing to do, but it can be hard sometimes. And I mean that mentally and physically, is that they need to take care of themselves, their family, whatever they need to do from that standpoint. And I also think you need to have some patience. You can't be wound up and ready to go for next season in October. You kind of got to pace yourself. And it's really, I know this is what's going to happen, is when football comes back, you're going to have a lot of hungry people, players and coaches, because they miss it, and people are going to be as healthy as they've ever been, taking a year off of playing. And so people will come back, but we need to be patient for a little bit, like I said, and take care of yourself and what's going on in your life. And then when it's time to get back to football, we'll get back to it.
Yeah, well, looking forward to getting back to it. Thank you for coming on, giving us and Lions fans a perspective that, although you've lost your leader in Ed, that the ship is still moving in the right direction. And looking forward to having you on again to talk about actual games and football and acquisitions and getting back to all that stuff. Thanks so much, Coach.
That sounds fun to me. And like I said, what you just said, the Lions are going to keep going, and we're going to get ready for next year. So onward we go.
And once again, we thank Rick Campbell for his time. He's done such a great job in Ottawa, taking the team to 3 great cups in 6 years, winning one, obviously. And you can just hear the resolve in his voice, but the optimism, the enthusiasm. And that's why, I have no doubt he's going to do a great job in BC. We thought it was going to be a powerhouse of leaders in the CFL, with the former MOP that signed there, Mike Riley, who they got in the free agent sweepstakes, and Ed Hervey, who had led the franchise and was able to not only secure a talent like Mike Riley, but a talent like Rick Campbell. And so they won't be working together on their quest of winning a championship, but I'm looking forward to see, based off of the foundation that Ed Hervey has put together, what they're able to accomplish in BC. Speaking of championship football, our Kubota reunions have been a chance for us to check in on some of the great champions in our game to figure out where they are now, what are they up to, and have them reminisce about their time in the spotlight in the CFL with the 96 Argos, their team close to my heart. So naturally, I want to talk to a guy who covered them, Don Landry, to get some of his reflections on the 96 Argos after we recently profiled them in our series driven by Kubota on our site. Coming up next, after this message, Don Landry.
For 107 years, every Grey Cup moment has included you, the fan. This is your league. Through fog and rain, in tragedy and triumph, you are the foundation of this league. Now take your place in history. For a limited time, you can etch your name on the Grey Cup fan base. Become a part of the Grey Cup's legacy. Visit greycupfanbase.ca to add your name and raise the cup.
So you may or may not know, Athabasca University, Canada's online university, turned 50 this year. That's right. Happy birthday. And they want to celebrate by giving away a CFL workspace makeover. The prize includes $3,500 in gift cards for workspace upgrades, plus exclusive CFL merch to deck out your space. Who couldn't use that in a time when we're all working from different scenarios and where work productivity is so important? So what do you got to do to get involved? All you have to do is enter now at cfl.ca/AU Workspace Makeover. That's cfl.ca/AU Workspace Makeover. I really love the remote air reunions driven by Kubota that we've had on the CFL.ca. And no disrespect to the 1998 Stampeders, the 81 Eskimos, and all the Hall of Famers we've seen. But for me, the one that is everything is the 96 Toronto Argonauts. As a kid, watching them, you know, watching how dominant they were, how prolific they were, how when you look at the roster, how many of them went on to do great things in the sport afterwards. That, to me, is the ultimate. So it was great to see Reggie Givens and Doug Flutie and Paul Mazzotti and Pee Wee Adrian Smith all together and having a laugh and telling some stories. But someone who could probably tell some better stories than those guys was a guy who covered them, and that would be Don Landry, who obviously you know for his work covering the CFL right now, but in 1996 he covered them for The Fan, for you know, a network that I do some work on the odd time, and you remember that championship team, Don, and I just love to bring you in the conversation because I feel old even looking at some of the names that were on the team, because I've covered some of their children playing football at this point. But for you, what was it like covering the originals in 96, you know, one of, if not, you know, the greatest Argos teams of all time?
It was so much fun because there was just this air of confidence, cockiness, joie de vivre. So much went right for them. And so much that they made go right in 96 and 97. Those were two powerhouse teams that went 15-3 each season. And it was a stark contrast because the year before Donovan, the team had gone, I think, 4-14. And then there was the cleaning of the house. So this was a complete flip-flop. And then Flutie comes in. He's got his magic. Don Matthews is hired as the head coach. He comes in with his attitude and his abilities to build cutting edge defenses and just imbuing the team with this, grab the nearest chandelier, guys, and swing from it. I'm going to treat you like men. You're going to treat me with respect. You're going to treat this team with respect. And we're going to win a lot of games. And that's the way it's going to go. So there was this just great, I won't say it was quite celebratory all season long, but it was certainly a happy place to go out and watch them practice at the time they were in Mississauga on the U of T campus, and then to cover them in games too. It was quite something.
Yeah, of course, the trailers in Mississauga,
yeah.
that housed, you know, one of the greatest teams of all time. Speaking of GOATs, when we have that conversation in the CFL, obviously the last name Flutie, but in this case the first name Doug, is part of the conversation. There's an argument that at that point, Doug Flutie was at the peak of his powers. No disrespect to what he did in Calgary or BC, but he literally looked like he was on a different level from everyone. Was that the best CFL version of Flutie that we got?
I think so, but you're right. It's kind of funny to say that because before he got into Toronto, he'd already won 4 Outstanding Player Awards. I mean, he was fantastic wherever he went, but it seemed like, I mean, he had great tools around him in Calgary and in BC too, but there was just something about the entirety of that Argos situation that maybe you'd have to ask him, but he seemed like he was a little extra comfortable. And he particularly was extra comfortable after that Grey Cup game in 96, because there was some question as to whether he could play in cold weather. The Grey Cup he had won with Calgary, he had won in the Dome in 1992. He had played in cold weather and won some games, but he'd also lost some. And there was that famous shot of him in one of the Western Finals. I can't remember which one it was, where he was over by the heater, just desperately trying to get his hands warmed up. But when he got to Toronto, I think he was sure. He obviously was absolutely sure of what he could do on a Canadian field and with Canadian rules by that time. And I think he knew, with guys like Pinball Clemens in his lineup and Jimmy the Jet Cunningham and Robert Drummond bulldozing in the offensive line that was probably the best one I've ever seen in Argos history, that he was going to get some stuff done.
Yeah, I always felt like that could he play in the cold conversation was a bit silly. I mean, he went to school at Boston College. It's not like he played at Florida State or something. But you mentioned pinball because, you know, that era of the Argos was a little bit of a reincarnation for him with Robert Drummond in the backfield. Pinball, you know, becomes, you know, what we see on every team, but kind of the, this multi-purpose tool in Don Matthews, as he often did, you know, help someone's career extend by reimagining what the role could be. What was that transition like for pinball?
It was, I think he found it kind of tough at first, but he quickly welcomed the challenges of it and saw the possibilities, as pinball does often, whatever you throw at him. He will pause and see the possibilities, and he did there. And you have to remember, he primarily was a running back and a returner. And in this offense, sure, he would line up in the backfield a lot, but he would also line up at slot back, and he becomes more Michael Clemens, the slot back, who sometimes run out of the backfield, sometimes used the way he used to be. He becomes that Michael Clemens, and he gets very good at it because, again, Don Matthews sees what he can be in space, sees how he can utilize him in different ways, which was one of his great talents, Don Matthews, is seeing players on both sides of the ball and imagining them in slightly different circumstances and what they can become. And pinball became just a terrific slot back. He became a really good receiver. He, you know, a lot of the balls might have been flat passes and things like that, swing passes, but he also was good at going and getting the deep ball and became a better and better receiver. And I think that shows in his numbers. And so, it was electric returner and a guy who's little and can run through some holes through the line of scrimmage to bona fide game-changing receiver is what Pinball Clemens became in 1996.
As often happens, we remember the offense, right, and those names and those points that they put up. But when you go back and you look at the roster of the types of players they had on defense, Demetrius Maxey, Noah Kanter, Donald Smith and Adrian Smith, Marcello Simmons, like they had some real players. And then right in the middle of all that, Mike O'Shea. Historically, does this defense maybe not get as much credit as they probably deserve?
Yeah, because of the being in the shadow of Flutie in that offense, everybody talked about Flutie ball, Flutie ball, Flutie ball. But and I wrote a column on this. You can see it on the CFL.ca website, all about that defense kind of being in the shadow. And it was a defense that became something in 96. And then in 1997, Donovan, you'll remember, it was dominant. In 1997 was maybe the best defensive year we've ever seen from any team in the history of the Canadian Football League. It's certainly right up there with Alberta Crude and the Baltimore Stallions defense of 1995, which was fantastic as well. And you mentioned Mike O'Shea, who comes to the team halfway through the season after trying out with the Detroit Lions. Lester Smith, who had played in Baltimore, was cast off when they went to Montreal, and he followed Don Matthews to Toronto. Demetrius Maxey, the fine defensive lineman who's now coached with Edmonton, he comes in October and really solidifies that defensive line. So these things kind of come into place. They coalesce. they congeal. And although the Argos didn't have a great defensive day against Edmonton during the Grey Cup, the week before in the Eastern Final, they did in a 43-7 win. So you could see the seeds, you could see it coming together by the time the 1996 Grey Cup game came around. And by 1997, and it was much the same personnel, no one could deal with that defense. Nobody in the CFL could deal with that defense throughout the entirety of 1997. Donovan, and in that year, the Argo air defense was number one by far. The next best team, the second most stingy team when it came to passing yardage, was Hamilton, and they were 1,000 yards behind. That's how dominant that defense became.
Wow. You know, some unlikely names and unlikely success stories on that defense, but you know, one unlikely name in terms of where they started and where they ended finishing, and someone who I fear is boiled down to just a flippant comment, is Mike Vanderjagt, who many only know as someone who Peyton Manning referred to as an idiot kicker. but when you look at Vanderjagt, who pound for pound, you know, let's take Doug Flutie out of the conversation, might be one of the best athletes on that team at 6'5 and you know, over 200 pounds. Got a kid coming out of Oakville, Ontario, who kicks in the NCAA at West Virginia, has one of the best CFL careers as a kicker, and then goes and has another great second life in the NFL as a kicker. What was Vanderjagt like to cover at that point in time?
He was a lot of fun to cover. I enjoyed his personality, and I think the team did too. You know, outside of him just being a very good kicker, who prepared for his NFL career, by the way, by not using a kicking tee in the CFL. He decided to just kick from the carpet, and he even went 5 for 5 in that snowstorm in Hamilton, which really turned a lot of heads, although they were, a lot of them, kind of shorter field goals, but still in those conditions and with no tee, he was getting ready to try the NFL. But as far as his personality went, I remember the next year in 1997, the Grey Cup game was in Edmonton, and the day before, it's hard for me to explain what he did, but he and some teammates got a table, and then he kind of stood behind it, and they put up like a coat above the table, and then he had his hands through the bottom of the coat with shoes on and just his head poking over. So he was doing like a little dance number as though he was this tiny little guy dancing on the table, and everybody was just uproariously laughing. And that was, you know, you could tell that that team was in a good mood and ready to really go out and dominate the way they did the next day. But the way that the team gathered around and they were all dancing with him, you could tell they really appreciated what he brought to that moment.
And lastly, before we go, I mean, whenever you're talking about different eras of Argos football, there's two found conversations. What was the team like on the field? And then what was the team like off the field in terms of ownership, in terms of fan engagement, both in the stadium, but also in the city, in terms of being a stakeholder and being part of the sports conversation? At that time and place, where were the Argos in terms of viability as a sports franchise in Southern Ontario?
They were in a difficult place, but not as difficult as the entire league. We have to recall that heading into that 1996 Grey Cup game, the league as a whole faced very difficult times, near bankruptcy. The Argos were probably on a little bit more solid footing as an individual member club than the entire league was. But by that time, they had rebounded a little bit because of the Rocket Ishmael situation in 1991. I think that brought in some new fans, but then they became terrible again and kind of fell by the wayside. And, you know, the Blue Jays are kings by then, the Maple Leafs, the Raptors are coming onto the scene. And so things became even more difficult for them. But they were still, if memory serves, getting 25,000 people to Sky Dome. And they, you know, they weren't having as difficult a time in the market, I think, as they are now. You would still hear, well, on my station on the Fan 590, when I was the Argo reporter. We had an Argo reporter. That's what I did. One of my jobs was just follow the team, you know, as far as they went. So I would say things were a little better for the team at that point in time, not as tough as they are today.
Well, hopefully, you know, some of this nostalgia of having the reunion happen online and having you kind of, you know, put it all in perspective helps us, one, scratch the itch of not having football, but also helps reignite some of those fond memories, and hopefully we can get back to those times with Argos football soon. Don, thank you so much for spending the time and giving us some perspective.
Thanks, Donovan. Anytime.
And so that does it for this edition of The Waggle. Again, thank you to Rick Campbell and thank you to Don Landry. We took care of both coasts, both an East Coast team and a West Coast team. So we went coast to coast on this episode. On all episodes, I tell you one thing at the end. And if you listen to the end, you already know it. We do this for you. So thank you for listening. Please continue to like, favorite, share, subscribe, wherever you're listening, but also continue to engage with us. Gotten some messages about who you'd love to see on the podcast. Keep those messages coming and we'll do our best. Until next time, take care.
The Waggle, presented by Sportclips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.